You're listening to Talking Hoosier Baseball,
a podcast by fans
from the IUBase.com website.
For anyone wanting more information on the Indiana University baseball program.
Yoana Richardson launches it out to left center. Piacentino is back at the wall. Goodbye! Home run!
Welcome. We are recording this on Wednesday, March 31st, 2021. I am Carl James, joined by stats guru Cassidy Palmer and the expert in catching ricochet foul balls, Chris Feeney. Josh Bennett has the night off. The Hoosiers hit the road to face off against a hot Michigan State squad this past weekend. The stage was set for a Friday's pitcher's duel. On the Spartan side was highly touted right-handed pitcher Mason Erla. For the Hoosiers, the consistent senior lefty Tommy Sumner took the bump. Sumner allowed a base runner in each of his five innings, but managed to limit Michigan State to only two runs before handing the ball to Braden Scott and Reese Sharp, who held the Spartans scoreless the rest of the way. The Hoosiers put Erla into trouble in the fifth inning. Morgan Colopy got the inning started with a single. Houston bunted Colopy into scoring position. Ashley then hit a ball to the outfield that was misplayed for an error. Kip Fugers drove in a run with a ground out. Then the Hoosiers unloaded with three straight hits to take a 4-1 lead. Because of the error, none of the runs were listed as earned. In the sixth, the Hoosiers really got to Erla. A single and two-hit batsmen loaded the bases for Barr, who walked in a run. Erla handed the ball to the bullpen. Paul Tates capitalized with a 3-RBI double that busted the game wide open. On Saturday, Indiana's top MLB prospect, right-handed pitcher McCade Brown, was coming off of a loss in the Purdue series as he started the game against Michigan State. He struggled with command, walking the leadoff man in each of the first two innings. He loaded the bases in the second inning, but managed to get out of trouble when Jordan Fusey executed an unassisted double play on a liner to end the inning with no runs. The Hoosiers produced their third four-run inning of the weekend in the top of the third. Drew Ashley led off, working another 3-2 count, but this time hitting a shot over the left field fence.
Yeah, it's also incredibly beneficial for the team because you have someone that you can look at. It's like yesterday I'm throwing to some of the freshmen, and they're talented, but you know they don't know yet, and I can use Drew as an example. It's like, do you ever feel like Drew's not in complete control of an at-bat, even when it's like an 0-2 or 1-2 count? And it's like, no, I'm like, me neither. And I've watched 100 really good college baseball players, offensive players over the last 10 years. And I've never felt more confident and comfortable when a guy's in a two-strike count than when Drew is. He's always in control.
The next two batters struck out. Tates then doubled and Kip Fugers walked, setting up a Fusey three-run bomb. With a four-run lead to support him, Brown looked like himself again, striking out all three batters he faced in the third. He faced a couple of base runners with two outs in the fifths, but got the final out via contact to have only given up one earned run in five innings. Brown finished with four walks and seven strikeouts in line for the victory. It was a cold day in East Lansing on Sunday with the wind blowing in. Indiana was set down 1-2-3 in each of the first two innings. Michigan State managed a leadoff walk in each of the first three innings off Gabe Bearman. The first inning saw no damage, but Bearman gave up two RBI doubles in the second and a sacrifice fly in the third.
On the mound, we need to get off to better starts. I don't have a problem, you know, when a guy doesn't have his best stuff or has a little bit of a shaky start, but we have to be able to control fastball. We have fastball command in the bullpen. We need to take fastball command of the game, and we need to be able to establish a fastball in the strike zone consistently.
Michigan State's freshman lefty Nick Powers was very effective with 2-1-2-3 innings to start the game. Indiana did not respond until down 5-0 in the top of the seventh. Jordan Fusey got a double, and Jeremy Houston had a big hit to drive in the Hoosiers' only run of the game. Paul Tates and Drew Ashley both had 13-game hit streaks end on Sunday, but Ashley did manage to extend his on-base streak to a ridiculous 39 games. Indiana managed to stay in first place in the Big Ten by half a game over Michigan and now also Nebraska. All right. Well, now we're going to get into Hoosier highlights. I've been looking through a lot of these things, trying to decide where I was going to land on that. And I think, and I guess I'm kind of obsessed with this, so I'm going to stick with this. I'm going to just say the second of the four run innings against Urla. I think that was huge of Indiana to be able to load the bases, to work a serious prospect Friday guy as hard as they did, produce 2 4-run innings, even if one of them was unearned. The point is the table was set, and then they just started hitting him. And then basically got into a position where they were able to work some free bags and force them to go to the bullpen and then get really beat. So the IU offense is now really clicking and working in most scenarios. And, you know, it's not just the, you know, they're able to hit typically a team's top guy. Hopefully they'll get a little bit better against what Mercer calls the crossfire lefties. So we'll see more about that going forward. Chris, what's your Hoosier highlight?
Thanks, Carl. I mean, you can't disagree with getting to the Friday night guy. We talked about it last week on the pod. That's what we wanted to do. Yes, like Coach said, we have to get to the carnival, you know, guy throwing the weird carnival game pitches too. But for me, the biggest highlight was the heart of the order. You know, that was a big piece. I said, we have to get these 2-3 guys rolling on that Friday. We got to pressure them. It has to be those guys. It would set the tone. You know what I mean? And I don't know who they were going to be, right? It turned out being Barr, Richardson, and Tates. That's just how it played out. But it had to be that heart of the order that would just put the pressure on him. And, you know, unearned runs, I don't care, Carl. I don't care how it looks to his ERA. You know what I'm saying? Extend innings, right? We talk about extended innings. I don't even think he got to 2 outs half the time with all those runs. But it was that you're putting pressure on him, right? Make him have to throw more. I don't care. And yeah, okay, his ERA doesn't look as bad as it might because of what had happened with the errors and the misplays. But you know what? That was 8 big ones in 2 innings against their Friday guy. And it's beating a drum. I don't care. We've been talking about this for 4 or 5 seasons. All right? There's a thing called getting stevered. when you know, nobody can get hits for the Friday guy. But you know what? They got hits for the Friday guy. And Tommy, you know, deserved it. And it was good to see some runs on the board. I don't care if we keep saying it. I'll gladly keep saying it. Cass, what about you for who's your highlight?
Well, I'm going to say there's got to be something to this great minds think alike thing, because my Hoosier highlight was actually first inning of the Friday game. The Hoosiers may not have scored in it, but got 3 hits off of Urla in that very first inning. And that did kind of set the stage for later. They weren't striking out. They made contact early and often, which, as we've talked about, is not normal on a Friday, especially against this caliber of Friday pitcher. So we were all kind of in the same ballpark there with Hoosier highlights this week. Now back to Chris to give out this week's hardware.
Thanks, Cass. Before we actually get to the red belts, since one of our major red belts is the Alex Dickerson Award, I just wanted to give a shout out to our 4 Hoosier alumni who are going to made the opening day rosters for baseball's opening day tomorrow. We have Alex Dickerson and Caleb Barriger for the Giants, Aaron Sliegers for the Angels, and Kyle Schwarber for the Nationals, which is terrible to say. I'm not enjoying this. The Mets will play them many, many times, but you know what? It is what it is. Congrats to the Hoosier alum for another MLB season getting started tomorrow. And, you know, guys to keep an eye on, maybe Stever gets called up. Ryan Halsted, you never know. Craig Dietler has spent time in spring training camps, you know, with the major leaguers in the past. I know these spring training camps have been a little different because of COVID, but you know, you never know who you're going to see jump up. But Timmy Herron has been impressive for the Indians organization. You could see him moving up. There's a lot less minor league teams now if people haven't caught on yet. So there's less opportunities, but then the opposite of that is you can move up quicker, right? Because you want to get a guy up to the majors, where else are you going to play him, right? And of course, Kyle Hart, right? He didn't make the opening day, but, you know, could be another chance for him to get an opportunity to play. So since we started with the Alex Dickerson Award, our red belt for hitting, I know Carl ripped off a lot of big hits during that, but consistently for the weekend, I'm going to go Cole Barr. He had 6 hits. He had a bunch of RBIs. He had a big walk. And it was really good to see Cole kind of really come out of it. You know, he had a couple of big hits through the season, but he hasn't really ripped off 3 games like that in a row, I don't believe. Like, Cass will probably figure out that I'm wrong later, but as far as the stats. But to me, it was Cole. It was really Cole. I feel like, you know, his consistency has been missing. I read a tweet, I believe it was the other day, from a certain alumni, an ex-Hoosiers pound. He really nailed it. His power bat might not be there, but the baseball IQ at-bats are even better now for Cole Barr. So he gets the offensive red belt award. The defensive red – what's up?
He's leading in slugging.
Is okay.
He's leading the team in slugging. Right. And that's without having hit a home run.
Home run.
Right? It's a different type of Cole Barr.
Yeah.
And on the weekend, he only struck out 2 times.
Mm-hmm. And there you go. It's a different dude, right? And I'm sure that's something he worked on. I know, you know, the draft didn't go the way he wanted, where they're getting shrunk and he didn't get his opportunity. But maybe he labeled some things to really work on. This might have been it. But for defensive red belt, we have an odd one. It's going to go to Ty Bothwell for his execution, breaking up that suicide squeeze play. Now, I'm a big fan of the suicide squeeze. I'm a big fan of the Butcher Boy, all those moves. But Ty kept his cool and made it happen. What did we say? It was a 1-2-5, right, put out. And, you know, he's nails out. He's nails as a starter. He's nails been in the bullpen. And when it comes to execution like that, for whatever reason, sometimes pitchers have a hard time with it, right? Whether it's just an easy throw to second, an easy throw home, sometimes they have difficulty. You can't get more pressure than that when you got to play at the plate. So Ty's going to pick up the Tony Butler Award. And for the Joey Donato Award, we've heard it before. I think he's won a couple now. McCade Brown, 5 innings, 1 run, 3 hits. All right. Was there more walks in this outing? Sure. Was he as dominant as some of the other ones that he's won? No, he wasn't. But he was one of the more dominant pitchers of the weekend. And McCade on a bad day seems to be able to keep it together. And I think that's impressive, too. He doesn't have to have the Bugs Bunny curveball rolling like he has those first couple starts. He can figure it out. And I don't think we can count on 16 strikeouts all the time. You know, that Andrew Salfranc run of Sunday starter was special. He was getting 12, 14 a game, I believe. But McCade gets the Joey Donato red belt. Now, we had a couple of questions come in. And big surprise. All right, we'll go to the mailbag. And Carl, can you guess what the first question was?
I have no idea, Chris. Surprise me.
Well, there was a couple of them, Carl. There was a couple of them in a few different ways. And I know it's shocking. One came in via email to the GoHoosiers.com. One came into the Twitter that I wrote, the IUBase17 Twitter account. And both involved, one guess. Take a guess, Carl.
Jeremy Houston Bunting?
It was not is Jeremy Houston Bunting. It was also not involving, you know, the Sunday Reds, which is what I thought it would be. I'll put it out there. I almost sent in a fake question. Imagine if you could do that. If you could, like, write in a question and it was really for me, that would be nuts. I know.
We don't do that here.
I would never, ever do that. No. I would never do that. I was thinking of doing that when nothing came in about the Sunday Reds. But the question, 2 times, will fans be allowed at the BART this year, Carl?
I don't know if I've taken that one before, you know, last week. yeah.
They keep coming in.
They keep coming in. They do. And you know what? You guys don't want to hear me talk about this. So you know what? I'm going to hand it off to Coach Mercer.
Yeah, I would love to. I would love to. I talked to my administrator, and we'll continue to talk to him about it. Yes, like you said, as far as I've been told right now, we're in a status quo. I wish that would change. I think it's a university policy. It's going to have to go through Monroe County. It's going to have to go through the university. I think the athletic department wants to be able to allow fans. I don't think that they don't want that. I think probably the NCAA tournament being at Indiana was probably on the top of the list. And hopefully as we kind of clear through the NCAA tournament, we're able to revisit the subject. You've just seen a lot of the different stipulations being lifted and mandates being lifted and opening up a little bit here. So hopefully we'll follow suit. I don't know that it's, I do know that it's definitely not my call. It's way above my head and I respect that. But at the same time, I do think it has to be a partnership with the university in Monroe County to be able to allow the athletic department to do those things. So between the university and Monroe County, they'll give us the kind of the marching orders. And I think we'll follow from there. I know we'll follow from there.
All right. That is all we will discuss on that topic. The next question is going to go to Cass. It seems that the bottom of the lineup needs to increase its productivity to help this team win the Big Ten and go deep in the NCAA tournament. Who do you see that could be, that could step out to help? You know, we've got Murison batting 347. Should we see more of him? What are you thinking about Fugers and Hunter? Could they step up? And is there anybody else we're possibly looking at?
Okay. Well, surprise, surprise. When I get a question, I find stats because of course. And looking at the bottom of the order so far through the season, regardless of who is in the bottom three, in the order, that chunk is batting 222 on the season compared to 278 for the team as a whole. And honestly, for me, 222 is not horrible for the bottom of the order combined. It's really not. Walk rate's a little low. They're only walking about 4% of plate appearances. That's a little low on my end, at least in my mind. Team as a whole is at about 11.5 to 12% right now. But they're also striking out less, to the tune of about 6 percentage points, 22% to 28%. So to me, the bats really aren't, it looks like it at times with just the sheer skill of the heart of the order of this Hoosier lineup, it can sometimes make the bottom of the order look worse than it actually is. And right now it's just really not that bad. Now saying that, bottom of the order is going to be the spot for your defensive specialists, your catchers, your shortstops. And for IU, IU's lucky enough to have two fantastic players at each position. You've got Hopkins and Southern at catcher, and you've got Houston and Machocki at short. And all four of those are extremely competent in the field. And you will absolutely take whatever offense they can give you to as a bonus to their defensive skill set. Now looking at the catchers, Colin actually hit 222 or 220 in the shortened 2020 season. There are too many 20s in that statement. And for a catcher of his skill set, 220 doesn't bug me. Jacob in his 2019 full season at Jacksonville hit 249. Absolutely love that. Right now, they're hitting 091 and 143 respectively. History says that their bats are gonna heat up a little bit. Not a ton. Neither one of them's gonna be Cole Barr or Grant Richardson, but their bats are gonna heat up a little bit. Just give a little more time for the water to find its level. You need a catcher, and they've got to go somewhere in the order. They're going to go there. Shortstop, Jeremy, who's pulling the bulk of the time, is hitting 207. And Grant Machocki's hitting 278 in his limited time. And for the shortstop position, I am absolutely fine with both of those numbers. Plus, you've got speed in both of those, players, typically out of the nine hole. Again, perfectly fine with that, given their defensive abilities. So in reality, there's only really room for one person in that bottom of the order. And with this loaded outfield that the Hoosiers have, it's probably going to come from the rotation there, the rotation of players in the outfield. You know, Richardson's going to be at center, and consistently right now, Drew Ashley's been in the left. With that being the case, for that third, seven hole, you're looking at the rotating right fielder. And honestly, it could come down really to the lefty versus righty matchup. You've got with the two primary rotating outfielders in Merton and Jesse, they're opposite handed. And so it could really be a lineup move, just who's probably going to do better against whoever's on the mound. And you can even pinch as the game goes on. If they sub in a new pitcher, you can switch it up. You can pinch hit. So honestly, I really see those two really rotating time. It almost doesn't matter to some extent. If both of them are hitting at least decently well, which they are right now, I don't see it changing from a rotation as is. And theoretically, depending on the matchups and who's hot and who's not at the time, you could see Kip or Jordan Fusey down there as the first base or DH. But I think in reality, it's going to be whoever's catching, whoever's shortstop, and whoever's right field are going to be those three down there most of the time.
But you also have an option there with the shortstops and the catchers in Frankfurt right field, where you have so many of those right fielders available that mm-hmm. they have pinch hitting opportunities. So late in game, you have a
key situation,
you can ton pinch hit, and then that gives you somebody else who can make a defensive sub. So that's another way that while those particular players may be like that, you might be able to sneak in a higher caliber hitter for a pinch hit.
Yes, and as we saw Michigan State do in game two, sometimes those string of pinch hitters can do well. Single, double, single. Like, sometimes the pinch hitters can really do their job in limited at-bats in the game. Those at-bats do add up over the course of the season. So let's see. Now, Carl, I've heard that you've worked out some new power rankings for the Big Ten.
Yes. What I decided to do, I was curious. My typical methodologies, my biggest methodology is what I called the CRPI or the conference RPI. Now it turns out that when everybody in the conference only plays other teams in the conference, that's just called the RPI. So that's already there. I don't even have to do any math for that. I just go to Warren Nolan's site and it tells me what the order is. Well, we're only, 4 weekends in. But that's still that's almost half of a typical Big Ten set. So it's starting to have some level of meaning to it, not a ton. You do have the actual rank of performance of just the standings. But I took those two along with the one media organization that ranked the entire conference preseason. And I know it's like, why would I go off a preseason ranking? The preseason rankings are based on talent analysis. All of these sites like D1, their bread and butter is their ability to scout talent for the next level. So that's what they make their money off of. That's what they do. So I think it's different than in a lot of other sports where these preseasons are really analysis on the talents of these teams. Because you'll find, I was rather impressed, the D1, was really big on Michigan in the early part of 2019. And, and we're still kind of big on them. But Michigan struggled there at the latter half of the regular season and barely made it into the tournament that they eventually played the final game in. So that was an example of where I think these talent analysis, I think that there's something to be said about that. So I included that as one factor in it. And I basically put those ranks together and I just used the old golf score thing. And this is the rankings that I came out with. Number one, Michigan. Number two, Indiana. Number three, Ohio State. Number four, Iowa. Number five, Nebraska. Six, Illinois. Seven, Rutgers. Eight, Michigan State. Nine, Maryland. 10, Northwestern. 11, Purdue. 12, Minnesota. And last place, Penn State. Now, I think part of that is because a lot of that's based on, you know, sometimes those are rankings based, and sometimes there's a lot more separation. Like, I think there's a lot more separation between Penn State's 11th place performance and Minnesota's absolutely atrocious 13th place performance. And the fact that they were predicted to be seventh overall is what's keeping them from being dead last. But then again, maybe these guys know something. It's like, hey, the talent is going to figure it out over the next month or so, and they'll finally figure out how to win some games. We'll see. So I don't know whether I really believe this methodology or not, but I wanted something that kind of showed what that strength is like. And it still thinks pretty highly of Ohio State, who is climbing in the rankings. They've played a slightly tougher schedule than the other teams at the top. But here is an interesting question. Which of the Big Ten teams has the best RPI right now?
Whoever's played the most pods.
I think I looked at it. Was it Iowa?
It is Iowa. And I think you are both correct. Yes, they have played the most pods, and it is Iowa.
I've learned that the ways of Carl's preseason analysis for many years. I've learned if you go to those tournaments, your RPI does better than if you play a rough road series.
Yeah. Early
absolutely.
On.
Absolutely. Early on, man. Preseason, yeah.
It's that early on preseason thing. The stuff all washes out by the time you get to the end of the season. But I was.
Is Ball State still up there on the true RPI? Is Ball State still up there?
I haven't checked lately.
I think I remember, Indiana State is still up there. Oh, I remember Indiana seeing State that number.
Fantastic. Yeah, both those teams are doing very well. Yeah, and Notre Dame is doing fantastic. The state of Indiana is a powerhouse in baseball this year.
Yeah, because they're playing all our schedules.
I was going to say, in the year that we can't play any of them.
Well, because why do you think they're getting those games? Those are our games. Mm-hmm. I bet a lot of them are. What are you going to do? But I mean, I will miss the Notre Dame game at Victory Field. The idea
that Notre Dame is competing for an ACC title, that's just, that's huge.
Yeah, you know, that's separate. That's different.
And by the way, Ball State has dropped a bit to 78.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
You start playing a conference, and that's all those numbers are going to come down. So, yep. Sorry, no Muncie Regional this year.
I was ready, man.
And we could still have a Terre Haute one, though.
And Terre Haute and South Bend are still both very big possibilities. So, South Bend looks like an actual realistic possibility. So,
yes.
I think Wisconsin officially should be even more upset that they don't play baseball now because they couldn't be on the first Carl Power Rankings. I gotta say,
I was about to ask if they came in at 14th.
No, they did not come in that high.
No. What a joke! Play baseball, will you please?
Yeah. All right. Well, that does it for the Power Rankings. Josh was not able to be with us tonight, but he did prepare a preview for Ohio State, and I'm going to read that to you folks now. So. The Hoosiers find themselves sitting at 11-3 and in first place in the Big Ten heading into their four-game matchup in Columbus against 8-7 Ohio State, who, by the way, I power ranked at number three. So that's, they're still looked at pretty good when you factor all those other numbers in. Friday is scheduled for a 4:05 first pitch, which we will see them square off against the only Hoosier native on the Buckeye roster. Garrett Burren is a 6'3 junior right-handed pitcher who played at Lawrence North. This season, he has a 3.91 ERA and is sitting at 1-1. Saturday, we will have a doubleheader starting at 1:05 p.m. One game will be against Seth Lonsway. He's a junior left-handed pitcher with a 5.23 ERA, coming in with an 0-3 record. The other will be against junior right-handed pitcher Jack Neely, who has a 3.57 ERA and is 1-0. The finale on Sunday is scheduled for 2:05, which will put Will Finning on the mound for the Buckeyes. He's 0-2 with an 8.56 ERA. So OSU's staff for the season has a 4.35 earned run average, and the starting pitchers have combined for a 2-6 record. So hopefully the Hoosier bats can get hot this weekend and get on a roll early. On the offensive side, the Buckeyes include freshman outfielder Cade Kern, who is the only hitter batting over 300 at 357. And they have two guys with some pop that both have four home runs already, outfielder Mitchell Okuli and infielder Connor Pohl. The weather looks pretty good. There's no rain in the forecast, but it will be a bit on the chilly side, looking about the mid-40s on Friday, up to 60 and into the mid-60s on Sunday. These games are scheduled to be broadcast on BTN Plus. And of course, you can always pull the Hoosier radio feed with Austin Render from iuhoosiers.com. Well, Cass has made some progress on statistics. What do you have for us this week?
Well, I will say I have made progress. I am still not quite all the way there, getting my stats updated from while I was gone. Work has been crazy, so that's been a little more time-consuming than I expected. But I have managed to pull a few things. On the pitching side, it stood out to me that the staff is still at about 11 strikeouts per game, which is still really high, especially for a good chunk of games into the season. But it's also clearly starting to work its way back into that kind of high normal type of range. It's not the 13 strikeouts a game that we were seeing. That might not seem like a lot, but statistically over time, 13 is a lot higher than 11 per game. But on the weekend, it was a little bit of a rough weekend comparatively for the pitching staff. They had a 2.14 batting average against, compared to just 1.62 on the season. And that 1.62 includes the 2.14 from this past weekend. Michigan State was just making decent contact. But even with that, the ERA really didn't go up that much for the weekend compared to the season, 2.77 versus 2.55. That's not horrible. And when looking at those numbers in context, like looking at 2.14 batting average against versus 1.62, that seems like a big difference. That seems like, oh my God, 2.16, that's really different. But when you look at the last full season, the batting average against was 2.40 and the ERA was 3.81. So it's a little apples and oranges there, because what's been a comparatively bad weekend so far for the pitching staff was still far and away better than most seasons on average. So there is a little bit of grain of salt to that. The walk rate went up a little bit, issued to me too many walks. I am happy at the 10 and below percentage walk rate, walks per plate appearance, or walks divided by plate appearance. And it was at 14 for the weekend. It's at about 11.5 on the season. Smidge high, but not horrible. And the walk or the strike rate, strikes divided by at bats, was actually down 10 full percentage points, 26.5% compared to 36.5% on the season. And again, that number kind of seems like a lot in the scheme of things, But what you're going to is striking out 1 in 3 to striking out 1 in 4. And that's going to come down to the start of the season was ridiculously high on the strikeouts. This is probably a little bit of water finding level. Again, I use that phrase a lot, especially early on. On the offensive side, on the weekend, the bats in a lot of cases were better than the season average. 284 batting average compared to 278 on the season. So a little bit better than the previous weekends. The walk rate was down about 5.5% this past weekend compared to 8% on the season. But the strikeouts were down, oddly enough, 24% compared to 28% on the season. Although there was a game that had a bunch of strikeouts, and I still think my favorite weekend offensive stat was that Jordan Fusey hit .417. He was 5 for 12, but also struck out in 42% of his at-bats. He struck out 5 times. Like, it kind of goes to show that the strikeouts aren't necessarily everything. It's really the timing with those, but you can still have a phenomenal weekend while also striking out a lot. They aren't mutually exclusive the way our brains kind of want them to be. And then another fun little tidbit, out of the 19 runs scored this past weekend, there were 12 two-out RBI, and 5 of those were by Fusey. We do like seeing the two-out RBI. We do very much like that. So that stood out to me as I was going through them.
Fusey got to be in double digits now with those two-out knocks, because he had a bunch that one weekend. I remember they hit about 5. He's got to have 10 already by now.
Probably. That would not surprise me. And just off of what I've done, let me see if I can find.
Because he had 5 when he won the Red Belt Award. What a better start this year for him.
Yeah, just based on, and this is just through March 9th. I haven't updated this because I'm not caught up on cumulative yet. He was already at 4. So very, very worst case scenario, he's at 9. And I would be surprised if that's not higher. So,
nice.
So those were the bits of stats that I managed to pull in addition to the bottom of the order stats. And so now we're gonna discuss the team as a group. And how about we kind of answer 2 questions. What are you impressed with the most about this team, and what is your biggest concern? So, Chris, why don't you start us off?
Well, I guess there's more than one way you could look at it, like what impresses you the most about the team, or what's the most impressive piece of the team. I mean, if you're going to go piece, Drew Ashley's got to be up there. You know, dude's hitting .400. Coach is shouting him out today. They're going to start making these bracelets. What would Drew do bracelets? I'm getting one. I know that. They start making those. I don't know if it's so much, you know, it's a little tricky question with like a 2-part. I don't know if it's so much what piece is so impressive, but I think what Drew is doing could lead into what's most impressive about this team also, is that the at-bats seem longer. They seem more under control. We're extending them. You know, there's been some moments and we all get frustrated, but you're just like, well, what was the plan there, you know, in years past? And even in you know, in this regime, especially at the beginning of it, you know, you go back 2 years ago, it was like, what are we doing out there, fellas? But now they really feel like there's a plan and there's a method to what they're doing. And if Drew's not the ringleader of that, I don't know who is. And just the 39, yeah, that's incredible. 39. He's got through every weekend, plus all the other ones we talked about last time. You know, it's so impressive. Just to get up, I know he didn't get the hit this weekend, whatever the case. Watch him just roll now. I mean, can he get to 50? I want 50. All right, jinx or not, I want 50.
Are we coming up with, do we need to get a sponsor like the chicken for the strikeouts? Do we need to find somebody who will?
Well, I tell you, it is tax season. Okay. It is tax season, and there has been a national, they give you a little bit now, forbearance or a little late filing fee. So, you know, this could go. This could go. He keeps rolling. We keep the death taxes and Jurassic going, because you don't really have to file now when you used to. They're giving you a little time to file. Maybe nobody files until Drew finally doesn't go on base. I really want to see the 50. I want Drew to get the 50 burger. It would be beautiful. Watch. This is totally going to jinx it for Friday. I already know this.
I am knocking on wood as we speak.
Yes, yes. So for most impressive, it would definitely be that. Drew actually, and the approach of the team, which is Drew's approach from what I've seen. And then to go for, I guess, the least impressive, I don't know how you would say it. But
biggest concern.
Biggest concern, do I have to see it? It's two pitchers that I thought were going to be bigger pieces, which would be Braden Scott, Braden Tucker, right? Both of them. I don't know. I mean, it could be injury. It could be the COVID layoff. It could be something that we're not seeing. I don't know. I was counting on them more, I guess, than what we've gotten out of them. I don't know if it's so much of a concern, but you know, what are we, like 11-2? Like, how much concerns are there right now? But if I had to think of a couple, those are the two that jumped in my head. Because honestly, when this whole thing started, I saw Tucker in the four-man rotation. Right? I did not see Ty when we were talking preseason. And I saw Scott as the lights-out closer or this guy who could pitch, you know, four or five innings, the Efros role, and dominate like he did last season. So those would be two concerns or something to worry about. But again, we're 11-3 or whatever the case. All right, one other concern I'll put in, the competition that we faced. Yep. Okay. Are we thinking we're a little better than we are right now? Michigan State didn't end up as good as I thought they would be, to be honest. We had a much easier time on our two wins with them than with Purdue. That's for sure. And then you had the slap thrower Sunday. You know, we got better competition this weekend, so that could even that out a little bit. But I'm really getting excited to start playing the better teams, so we really know what we're looking at.
And I'm going to counter that a little bit. This is going to be an issue for everyone across the board, but it's going to lead to some pretty intense variability for everybody across the board. There was no non-con. There were no tune-up games. There were no low-level opponents. Everybody's kind of in that growing pains zone that most teams get at the start of the season.
We really never played cupcakes. It's not like it's football.
Not cupcakes.
We would go out there. We'd play some stud teams early.
We do, but we'd also have some lower... I mean, we've talked about Ball State and Indiana State doing well this year. That's right. Not always the case. We'll sometimes have an Illinois State who sometimes is decent and other times is not.
Right. They're good now. They're good this year.
Right. And so we'll occasionally have at least a few of those midweek, less pressure. You can try some stuff out in low pressure settings.
The midweeks.
And we don't have that.
We don't have that part. Yeah.
Also, you know,
yeah, but they always schedule good stuff early.
One of those three tournaments usually is a little lighter.
Yeah, or at least has some light. It might have us and maybe one other bigger Power Five type opponent, but also has a couple of lower ones as well.
Right.
So just as a cat, that's why I'm not too super duper concerned about that. Yet.
About like the strength of schedule, so to speak. Yeah. Okay, yeah. I got it. Yep. Yeah.
It's a little bit of both. It's on my radar as strength of the teams we've played, but it's also treat it kind of like the non-con. You do get the occasional, we really shouldn't have lost to them, but it was a midweek game. You do get it. And so I'm kind of trying to keep that mindset.
Yeah, it's just a little more nerve-wracking when they actually count on the standings.
Yes. So. Yes, that is very true.
And God forbid we would have lost one of these series. Like, just losing the one game is like, it's kind of okay.
Yeah.
Well, and then we've also done something that only one other team has done, and that's Iowa, which is win a pod. We were the only team until this past weekend to have won a pod.
Yep.
The best of any team had done was
so they all split.
They were all doing 2-2 splits. Ah. Iowa was the first team to flip that script after us this last weekend. So
we might be the only team not to lose two in a row. I don't know if that's true, but if it could be. Because otherwise, if you're splitting the pods, and maybe we're the only team yet that hasn't lost two in a row. It's consistent. At least we're taking all the series.
Yeah. Well, did split with Rutgers technically so far.
Yeah. So, Carl, what would you think about your two most impressive or biggest concerns?
I'll echo a little bit of what Cassidy said from a concern perspective, which is just that they just still haven't quite got it figured out as to, you know, who's going to be every day in right field. I don't know that they have to, but, you know, it's, you know, just know that sometimes getting to a point at which you've got someone every day will allow a little bit more consistency. But again, that's not, again, we're kind of having to dig to try to find what we would really call concerns, you know. Coach was talking about, you know, one pitching profile that they're trying to deal with, stuff that, yeah, it's a lot. Things are just, I think, a lot overall. I'm feeling pretty good about the core fundamentals of this team. And my biggest positive, the thing that has impressed me the most, and we talked about it earlier, we've only really touched upon it because it's been so quiet, is, you know, Cole Barr leading the team in slugging without hitting a home run. That's
I don't know that anyone would have called Colin Hopkins hitting a home run before Cole Barr.
Yeah.
On this.
No way. No
but
chance.
I mean, but he's still hitting the ball. Mm-hmm. It's just in a he's doing the job in a different way, and he's doing it more consistently. Mm-hmm. Which if there was concerns we had about Cole before, it was that there would be games he would just go away, and that would be that part of the lineup would be a hole until he and Lloyd decide to get into a into a one-upsmanship and home runs, and that was fun and all, but it was always so nerve-wracking. And now it's, I think we got what, one home run per game right now. There are teams in the Big Ten like Northwestern. I think Northwestern got that many home runs in a weekend.
Yeah, so we're just under one a game.
So it's just weird that we're continuing. Indiana's continuing to be a dominant team overall
without the home run,
and it's doing it without nearly the home runs that they were relying on before.
Yeah.
Well, I remember hearing that from when it was happening. Like, oh, Indiana fans, this is Mercer's team. Don't get used to this. This is Limo's players. It ain't gonna be like this. But you'll still win.
Yeah.
But it won't be like this.
Yeah.
Well, it's like when Coach comes on the pods, he's like, listen, guys, right? He's like, I want a single and a double every time. That's a guaranteed run. You don't have to make any decisions. Mm-hmm. Right? A walk and a double is a run every time, guys.
Yep.
I don't have to do anything. I stand there and look at my feet. You know, and he's right. You know, a single, Barr hits the double, or Ashley hits the single, but Richardson hit the double. Mm-hmm. I'll take runs wherever they come from. And Barr, I never even realized the slugging thing. That is crazy. And he's got the donut.
Well, going with consistency for Cole, just compare. So the, what was it, 15 games from 2020? Mm-hmm. In the shortened season, which is about where we are now, Cole had 20 strikeouts in 57 at-bats. Right now, he's at 11 strikeouts in 45 at-bats. He that was my big kind of bugaboo with him last year and in the past, was the strikeouts. I know I just got done saying that good offense and strikeouts for an individual are not necessarily mutually exclusive. But I would rather trade consistent contact, even if it's not the extreme power, for fewer strikeouts.
At some point, they're going to find holes. You know, even ground balls are going to, an occasional ground ball is going to be a hit. You're going to see, you know, a ground ball to the right side that will move a runner over. Those,
yep.
there's lots of things that can happen when the ball's put in play.
Yep.
You know, even what started a lot of the scoring, was a dropped fly ball. Mm-hmm. So there's things that you can do that would normally be outs that still produce positive things.
Yep.
All right. Any final thoughts anyone have on this or other topics we want to discuss?
I will say we mentioned Drew as a big positive with his approach and his ridiculous streak and all of that good stuff. I'm going to throw Paul Tates in there too. Because he also had that 13-game hit streak going, and I don't know that we necessarily expected that.
We're not even close.
When he came in. So I do want to throw that out there as well. As a very good positive. It just feels like there's a lot more consistency this year.
Yeah.
With the concern being, if you have a game where you can, because there's so much consistency across the board, you can live if one or two guys are having an off night. It's if more than that are having an off night, and that's where our offense seems to struggle, is if more than one of those key guys has an off game. I mean,
you've got Ashley, Richardson, Tates, Barr, Fucci. At this point, are producing at a very high rate. And then you've got a couple other guys who are contributing. We haven't seen that kind of offensive consistency with that and many balance. Guys. Since 2014.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Demuth, it's Travis, it's Schwarber, it's Donnelly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is. It really is.
Yeah.
Speaking of those guys, right, with baseball starting tomorrow, that's crazy. Yeah. It really is that lineup, though. You know? It is. But this team's deeper, though. You know, it's deeper.
It's deeper, but then pair that with the pitching staff that's been out of its mind. Like a 2.55 ERA, a 1.62 batting average against – a whip that's just over one. Like,
listen, Skip didn't have Rapsodo. What do you want?
Well, although there is one caveat I will put on this, which is that the depth though is better for everybody. Everybody is deep.
Yes,
and that is what everyone's talking about. That we're seeing it to where it's. We're used to a Sunday game being, oh, our guys are just going to tear through this guy. And we've had multiple nerve wracking and now even a loss on a Sunday. So, and where they're teams of plenty of arms. Yep. So.
True.
Yep. I would agree with that.
Well, that will do it for this edition of Talking Hoosier Baseball. Read up on Indiana Baseball at iubase.com. Follow us on Twitter at CUAtTheBart and at iubase17. On Instagram, we are iubase. And subscribe to the Talking Hoosier Baseball channel on YouTube. It features these video podcasts, game clips, media availabilities, and more. For Chris Feeney and Cassidy Palmer, I'm Carl James. And we look forward to the time we can see all of you at the park.